Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, October 26, 2015. Officials with the SPLM in opposition finally signed the security arrangement document, but with some reservations.
Will they sign our reservation that all our forces can be divided together? If they agree, okay, it's good. We really understand. It's good. Because we need to finalize the suffering of our people.
And five people were killed in an attack on the Juba Kajokeji Road, the second attack in 2 days.
So last evening, the four staff came back, but the driver was not there. So it was only at night when we got news that he also managed to get to a military barracks. The driver was badly beaten.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Riek Machar's armed opposition group today signed an agreement in Addis Ababa outlining security arrangement during a transitional period in South Sudan. The government signed the agreement last month at a workshop in the Ethiopian capital. Machar's SPLM in opposition refused to sign then, saying it disagreed with the proposal that would see several thousand troops deployed in Juba at a time when the capital is supposed to be demilitarized. Iskander Freo reports from Addis Ababa that even though the rebels signed the deal today, they still have reservations about the proposed security arrangement.
According to the minutes of last 5,000 government troops will be deployed in Juba to guard military barracks, bases and warehouses, and 3,000 will make up a joint integrated police force that will patrol the capital. Machar's negotiators refused to sign the document last month, saying the force that would guard military facilities should include opposition troops. The opposition also argued that sending thousands of troops into Juba would negate one of the conditions of the peace agreement signed in August, namely that the capital should be demilitarized. But today, the opposition finally agreed to the number of troops that will be deployed in Juba in both forces. But a spokesman for the SPLM IO, William Duck, says that is the only condition the two sides have agreed on. Duck says the opposition still wants the military guard to be made up of equal numbers of SPLM and opposition troops, and is calling for talks on the issue to continue.
Now, I think the talks will be detained. Now, the government and the IGAD Plus, because they ordered us to sign the minute, and we have signed the minute. Now, our question, will they sign our reservation that all our forces can be divided together? If they agree, okay, it's good. We really understand. It's good. Because we need to finalize the suffering of our people.
Dark says the opposition also has strong reservations about the number and makeup of the presidential guard and two battalions that were created by the IGAD Plus peace deal. The chief mediator for IGAD at the long-running South Sudan peace talks, Yu Masfen, says the two sides in the conflict will continue to discuss security arrangements until they have ironed out their differences.
Now, the SPLA in opposition has decided to sign those minutes, and the parties in the meeting have agreed to immediately continue their meeting until and when they address all concerns as expressed in the minutes and chapter 2 of the agreement.
Seyum says there are still many details to hammer out, but he is optimistic that the two sides will eventually reach consensus.
We still have to, that they have to deal with the guards for the barracks and so on. So we have a number of issues, but we're sure the pillars have been very firmly planted, and there is no way of going back for it.
So they signed with reservations. Is that what you are indicating?
Well, it is their commitment. Nobody would impose anything on them. It is their commitment, and truly we should congratulate them now.
South Sudan's Deputy Foreign Affairs Minister Bashir Bandi says his side will try to erase the opposition's reservations with the security arrangements as the talks continue.
These are technical issues which will be addressed by our technical teams in the security sector.
One of the issues the IO has been proposing is to divide the 5,000 between you and the IO.
These are details which will be discussed. The agreement is very clear, but we are flexible. We'll discuss and see how we can address their concerns and see how we can really build the confidence between the parties.
The security arrangements are seen by IGAD and its international partners as a key provision of the peace deal signed in August. Last month, U.S. Special Envoy for Sudan in South Sudan, Donald Booth, said that agreeing to transitional security arrangements for South Sudan was a necessary first step toward implementing the peace deal and putting an end to the suffering of the South Sudanese people. Tens of thousands have died and millions have been forced from their homes since South Sudan plunged into conflict in December 2013. With fighting still ongoing in parts of the country, in spite of a ceasefire that was declared at the end of August, millions of South Sudanese face severe food insecurity and thousands are at risk of starving to death, the United Nations has warned. For VOA News, I'm Skander Freo in Addis Ababa.
Authorities in Riverjur County in western Bahar Ghazal state are trying to resolve a seven-decade-old conflict between two communities. Local officials say it is time for the two communities to put their past behind them and work for peace. Michael Atit has more for VOA from WOW.
Under the shade of mango tree at Roch Roch Dong Payam of Ju River County, about 100 people gathered on Friday to hear the findings of the committee formed in 2013 from people of both clans to resolve the feud between the two clans of the Luo tribe, the Pangere and Pukang. Committee member James Uchala says, after holding 5 meetings with elders and youth from both communities, they learned a disputed border at Bal is one of the problems still causing tensions between the two sides.
The committee had started with calling a meeting in which elders from both sides were targeted to tell their young men to stop fights as efforts continued, aiming at final peace. The second meeting was convened on 29th of March 2013 at Bal, an area on that borders the two communities.
27-year-old Urasio Akeo from the Pungera clan says before the two sides sign a peace deal, the government should demarcate their border to avoid any future conflict.
When you want to sign a peace, you need to know which is your border with the other community. So the issue is really about the border, which is not really shown, but Pungera clan has actually accepted peaceful coexistence, but they need to show them which area is their borders.
But Peter Dwai Uyu from the Pukang clan insists the disputed land belongs to his clan.
We have our ancestors' tomb. They were buried there. And how are we going to leave that place for other clan? This is the point of disagreement now.
Speaking in her native Luo, Mary Kurmabik, a mother of 5 from Pukang community, calls on local leaders to do everything in their power to ensure that the two communities can coexist peacefully.
I need only peace for me and my children. We were born in this dispute and many of our clan members have lost their lives. If there is anything, it should be discussed and resolved. We are tired of war and we need our children to go to school.
Ju River County Commissioner Simon Athwai Akot says the county authority will expand the committee beyond its current 12 members to help iron out the community's differences.
We have given a go-ahead to the committee to identify more experts so they can fasten the peace process. After 1 week, I expect them to give me feedback, and after that, we might come back here again to witness the reconciliation.
Local leaders say up to 400 people have been killed since the conflict erupted between the two communities more than 70 years ago, and they are determined to put an end to the fighting. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in WOW.
From Wau, we take you all the way to the Tanzanian capital, Dar es Salaam. They are counting the votes in Tanzania following yesterday's presidential and parliamentary elections. It's expected to be several days before we learn whether the opposition has unseated the ruling party, which has been in power more than 50 years. VOA's Africa 54 host Vincent Macori is in Dar es Salaam and is monitoring the ballot count. He spoke with Joe DiCapua about the elections.
Up to this point, there's no clear indication who is winning at the presidential level. They're releasing the results in rather piecemeal fashion from isolated parts of Tanzania. And therefore, at this point, it's really not easy to tell who of the presidential candidates is ahead of the other.
Any idea when the results will be in?
The Electoral Commission say that they are allowed by the law to take up to 7 days. They've actually said that they're likely to announce this on Thursday. There's a possibility it could be done on Friday, but certainly before Saturday.
Now, of course, there were also parliamentary elections. Can you give me the latest on those?
The way it's being done is that the Electoral Commission officials are releasing the parliamentary election results piecemeal. And so they are giving numbers from different regions of Tanzania. And so up to this point, it looks like the CCM party, the ruling party, has secured a little more in terms of parliamentary seats. But again, it's because the results have not been announced from so many of the regions and people are getting impatient. It is expected that perhaps by this evening, people may have a better picture as to who is having more seats in parliament.
Have you heard of any reports of irregularities or violence or anything like that?
There are no massive issues of irregularities, but there have been reports in isolated polling stations where, for example, they claim that some officials try to interfere by perhaps withholding some ballots or trying in a way to manipulate the system so that they can add numbers, add ballots that belong to one candidate to the other one. But it's not a widespread issue. It's fairly isolated. But in terms of demonstrations and protests, you have witnessed some in Zanzibar where the opposition presidential candidate for Zanzibar announced himself the winner and was calling on the Electoral Commission to confirm that. So there was some protest earlier by his supporters who want to see him declare the president in Zanzibar.
Vincent, what is the mood like now in Tanzania following the vote?
It is fairly tense. People are very, very concerned because it looks like on either side, each is expecting to win this election. There's an appearance that it will be a close election, and therefore, depending on who wins, the other side might dispute it. So people are fairly tense, and they hope that it will go on peacefully at the end when they do announce the final result, especially for the presidential candidate.
That was Vincent Macori, the host of VOA's Africa 54 television program, speaking from Dar es Salaam with VOA's Joe DiCapua about the elections in Tanzania. Officials say 5 people were shot dead and several more wounded today when gunmen attacked them as they traveled along the Juba-Kajokeji Road. VOA fellow Kaltuma Vanessa reports it's the second attack in as many days along that road.
Today's incident is the latest in a series of attacks that had occurred along the Kajokeji Road. Jacob Akwanshuku, a lawmaker representing Kajokeji County in the Central Equatorial State Parliament, says the people of Kajokeji are living in fear.
The other day, people were ambushed and robbed. Everything went. Yesterday, some people also fell into ambush. They were dragged into the jungle, tied down. 2 of them, lady and a man, escaped. And the driver of the car came this morning. Now, today around 10 and 11, a convoy of the transport company was going from Juba to Kajokeji, also fell in the ambush. And exactly up to now, we have now recorded 5 people dead, 2 ladies and 3 men.
A similar incident occurred in July when 4 people were killed on the same road. Yesterday, a vehicle with the humanitarian aid group Cross, or Association of Christian Resource Organizations Serving Sudan, was ambushed while transporting staffs from Kejukeji to Juba. Across Executive Director Elisama Wani says his staff was ordered to stop and move into the bush. He says other men on motorbikes were also dragged into the bush.
They took them to push their motorbikes through the bushes and then they left the others. So eventually the others untied themselves and then ran and got some help.
Wani says the attackers were interrogating the people they dragged into the bush.
We were told that they were asking about their tribes. And when they discovered that you're from a certain tribe, they would focus more on you. And they didn't like to see Ugandan. They didn't like Dinka. And our driver is from the Mundari tribe. We didn't like him at all.
Kwanshuk says some of those dragged into the bush were humiliated and stripped naked. He says the national government is supposed to provide security to the people in the state.
Security has become a problem, not the Central Equatoria's alone responsibility, because security is a national issue, and the Central Equatoria tried the best to report. This has become a problem that should not only be the Central Equatoria addressed, but should be addressed by the national government as well.
Police spokesman Colonel James Mande says a convoy of police and security personnel was dispatched today to the location where the incident took place. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa in Washington.
That report was prepared by Waki Simon Wudu in Juba. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Minister of Education and Science says young South Sudanese need access to quality education if they are going to succeed. That story after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you celebrate at weddings?
Oh, well, having wine and socializing with everybody around, wishing the couple the very best in their married life.
First of all, I don't take alcohol, but dancing, yes, I do dance, you know, especially when I'm going to present my gifts, I have to dance.
We have lost the habit of going to weddings. It's a lot of sad events that succeeded. You know, after about 3 weddings, we had serious problems with the couples and there were divorces within the next 2 years.
I eat, I enjoy myself, I have fun, I dance, I do everything that I want to do. Even if it's a matter of dancing my head off, I will dance. That's how I enjoy the wedding.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Experts are calling on South Sudan to open more technical schools, restructure education system, and harmonize the national curriculum to raise the quality of education. Education Minister John Guy says the government has plans to improve the quality of education in the country, which he says has been damaged by decades of war. Philip Thornaleu has more for VOA from Juba.
24-year-old George John went to build airplanes. The South Sudanese youth assembles small engines and metal parts to design airplanes but does not work for any company. He displayed his work on a projector to the 100 or so youth and officials in attendance at Saturday lecture.
This is the first drone I designed. It's an unmanned aero vehicle, but I didn't have the system to power it up, the GPS and all that. Yeah.
John says he loves building aircraft but does not have the resources to advance his education and build the aircraft engine of the future.
My challenge has always been the engine, the proper engine to use on the plane, designing it and all that, yeah. Though one day I hope to get a better one after my studies and build better planes.
John is one of many South Sudanese students attending the discussion here in Juba who appear to be creative, smart, and eager to learn, but lack education opportunities to develop their talents. John Guy, South Sudan's Education, Science, and Technology Minister, says young South Sudanese need access to research and science-based education if they are to become successful engineers, doctors, and scientists. He notes that several decades of war have set back South Sudan's quality of education.
You can be a primary school dropout and go to the village, spend 10 years there waiting that things will improve. The same thing with secondary school. At that time, the quality of the degrees of the education did not necessarily...
Guy says, through the government's strategy called Education Vision 2015 to 2025, his ministry hopes to create administrative structures that will strengthen a unified national curriculum and improve quality education. He acknowledges that many young South Sudanese have no jobs and call on parents to work with the government to reduce youth unemployment.
What it requires is for the people who have all these children in their houses to begin actually to protest to the government. Those of us who are hosting all these jobless people, we begin to talk to the government, man, do something. These people, because the salary I have is too small for them.
Guy says other plans include a technical education policy 2015 to 2020 aimed at strengthening South Sudan education curriculum. Professor Patricia Sampson, Dean of Juba University's School of Public Service, says the country's education policy must be viable if they are actually going to empower young people to get jobs and help build the nation.
All those wonderful ideas, many of which are already being implemented now through the ministry, require not just teachers and academics, but they require strong managers and leaders. The implementation requires planning and budgeting and follow-through and actual oversight of the execution.
And Samsung says, training teachers alone won't empower young people to certainly become job creators. Lwala Chwekding, director of the Ebony Center for Strategic Studies, which organized the discussion, agrees. Deng says when he was the Sudanese Minister of Petroleum prior to South Sudan independence, he had planned to train 1,000 South Sudanese petroleum engineers, 100 from each of the country's 10 states.
And I had persuaded the Chinese to take 300, the Indian 300 per year, and the Malaysian 400. But when I left the ministry, of course, because of this separation, but then as just you said, plans, when there are no leaders or managers to implement them, they just become papers on the shelf.
But Education Minister Guy insists that some of his plans will be realized soon. He says high education directors will be instructed to hire young, qualified people. Reverend John Chul, the Director General for South Sudan's Vocational Training Centers, says the Labor Ministry is doing its best to train job creators who will train others in things like construction, bricklaying, and carpentry. He says there are 5 national vocational training centers, including the Mayo Center in Wau and a Luag Luag Women Training Center in Rumbek.
Minister of Labor is very deliberate to produce people who have skill and people who are competent to engage immediately, not later. Immediately in the labor market.
Attendees say setting up more learning institutions across the country will reduce the cost of sponsoring South Sudanese students in foreign countries for higher education. For VOA News, I am Philip Donaleo in Juba.
And other groups are complaining about South Sudan's level of education. A report published by the Central Equatoria-based civil society group, the Center for Democracy and Development, indicates secondary schools are facing big problems with the new education syllabus. The report also shows the Ministry of Education failed to distribute enough books for the schools so that students could pass their exams. VOA fellow Justin Tito has more from Washington.
The report was released late last week during a public debate in Yei municipality. Dara Felix, program manager for the Center for Democracy and Development, says it took the group 7 days to collect the data in 11 schools in the county. Felix says 90% of secondary school students in Yei did not pass when they sat for South Sudan secondary school examination for the first time last year.
The transition from the other syllabus to South Sudanese syllabus. The approach to Ugandan exams is so different to approaching South Sudanese exams too. There was the materials. Yes, the Ministry of Education came up with the curriculum for South Sudan, but again, the books were not there.
The schools in Yei County have been using the Ugandan syllabus in years past. Last year, the Ministry of Education announced a shift from the foreign syllabus to its own syllabus for all South Sudanese schools. Some school administrators and teachers in Yei are complaining that the shift was not handled well. Jacob Hakim, the head teacher of St. Joseph Lotaya Secondary School, says last year his school has 41 students, but only 16 passed the exams, even though the school is considered one of the prominent schools in Yei. Jacob says South Sudanese textbooks are bulky, and what is worse, South Sudanese secondary students now have only 4 years when they used to have 6 years to prepare for the exams, and some children do not even have access to textbooks. Hakim says all of that is resulting in poor student performances.
You find the textbooks not available, but they say just you teach this area, or sometimes they send teachers to go and search in the internet, and in our station here, there's no one who has even a computer or a laptop, so it's very difficult.
Buga Alex Yusto, a Daystar secondary school teacher in Yei, says teachers are not paid enough, making them unwilling to perform their duties.
As a teacher, one of the challenges is that you find that there is no proper motivation given to teachers, and you find that to discourage teachers from doing their professional job. The teacher here is getting an amount of 400, and some schools it is 450.
According to the Center for Democracy's report, the most poorly performed subjects include science and Christian religion education. Teachers in Yei are organizing seminars on their own time to help students pass the exam this year. Felix says quality education is the responsibility of every single person in the country.
Government has got the responsibility. All our stakeholders, all our well-wishers of our country have got a responsibility, have got a task, yes, to see that we have education that as the only tool to direct this country. And the practical things that as an organization we expect to see is to see these books developed, and these books should be summarized into versions that our students can be able to adapt it very easily.
In 2014, Central Equatoria State former Education Minister Hastin Yakwe said due to the ongoing conflict, it was difficult to pay teachers' allowances. This year, teachers say their salaries have not been increased and they cannot make ends meet on what they are paid. And Alex says many teachers he knows are leaving the profession because of the poor pay. I am Tito Justin, reporting for VOA from Washington.
And that report by Tito Justin brings us to the end of our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song We Want Peace by Emmanuel Jal.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, I'm looking for some people who's looking for peace. Maybe together we could make the war cease. Now we can send mankind to the moon, and we can reach to the bottom of the sea. That's why it really kind of baffles me that we cannot end wars and bring peace. And we cannot change the way people act, and we cannot change the way people think. So if we sit back, chill out and relax, civilization will soon be extinct. That's why I am calling on the whole wide world. Come on, people, would you help me? Let's scream and shout, cause we want peace. To say the least, I dedicate this song to the common people caught in the middle of this common evil. I wish the world was a little bit better. Time to start looking at the man in the mirror. The devil policeman. The end of good genocide with Hitler so he can feel a war of genocide and never was weakened. Lighting up the land cause nobody was speaking. That's why I am. I'm calling on the whole wide world. Come on people, would you help me? Let's scream and shout.
We have been listening to Emmanuel Jal with the song We Want Peace. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for joining us. Tune in again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Who's gonna shout for the poor people living in Darfur? The world gone deaf, the world gone